Go ahead, introduce yourself, Rob.
Hey, I'm Rob Cowie, and I'm one of the producers.
This is Dan Myrick. I'm co-writer, co-director.
This is Ed Sanchez. I'm co-writer and co-director.
Greg Hale, producer.
This is Mike Manello, co-producer.
The Blair Witch Project, starring Isaac Hayes as the monster.
Hopefully you guys are not expecting a really serious, insightful comment.
En octubre de 1994, tres estudiantes...
We actually had many arguments about how to word this.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was a pretty big deal.
For such a simple thing.
We ended up mud wrestling for it.
So the first voice that you hear is Lonnie Glarum, our head PA.
Okay. And we cast for weeks to find
the right Lonnie voice, as, the right moron voice.
And that's Lonnie's house.
Yep.
And we're all sitting outside in a car with binoculars.
All nervous.
Nervous as hell.
Except for me. I wasn't nervous at all. This was totally easy going for
books that Mike and I had to track down forever. Well, Mike did, really.
And Josh, of course, was really late.
Mr. Joshua Leonard.
Ladies and gentlemen.
As the butler.
Mr. Punctuality himself.
That's what we're shooting on. No one knows that. So this is camera before it's broke.
This is the CP16 that was sold on eBay last week for $10,000.
That's right. So now here's the first intercutting between 16 black and white there and color video.
All of this video shot on a lovely RCA high 8 camera for about $499 we got from Circuit City.
So it was later returned to Circuit City.
No, that one wasn't. That one, Rock has got that tape.
This is actually the only scene that's overdubbed. We did ADR on it. Heather did the voice from L.A., and we added the song from an Orlando band.
Digging Lilies.
And then the voice right there, Mike's voice, is actually Tony Cora, the sound guy and the guy who did the music.
Right. There was an animal song that we could not afford
to
pay the rights for.
It was We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
Yeah.
So it was unusual that it was on the radio.
Yeah, this is a shot we added for the new cut after Sundance. That thing about the batteries.
Now, this is the actors here. They're really buying their food here for the trip.
That power bar that just went by, it took me forever to get approval to use power bar in the film. And now that we have approval, we get boxes and boxes
of
power
bars. We get power bars.
This is the actors. That was the actors overspending. That was actors spending all the money that we had given them for the whole.
Yeah. Actually, Josh
borrowed 3 days.
Borrowed $20 from me.
Right. Yeah, to go to the restaurant.
Right.
This is Ed's sister.
Ed's sister.
My little sister. Don't say anything. All right.
We're not saying anything.
I'm not saying anything. I could, but I didn't.
Nothing's being said at all.
I could, but I didn't.
Can't say anything.
So just. I want to present this in as straightforward a way as possible, and I think the
legend is unsettling enough. That was another moment we added in after Sundance.
So this is actually, I guess, the only scene that is actually shot in Burkittsville.
Yeah. So stay away from Burkittsville because this is all that that was ever shot there.
Yeah.
Stay away from the cemetery.
Stay away from Burkittsville, please.
It's a beautiful little town. We picked it because it had the right scenic look and had the mountains behind it.
Yeah.
Had a perfect cemetery for this scene.
Oh, he licked it. God bless him. Cheers. That's supposed to eat it. We need that for the rest of the shoot.
This is Burkittsville.
And that's the sign that was just stolen.
I'm not sure if that one's it, though.
Yeah.
There's one sign that was stolen, and they took the other ones down.
Yeah, they took all of them.
And look at this beautifully composed shot of that dirt pile back there.
Yeah.
I mean, Burkittsville, the other way is such a beautiful angle, and they pick this.
Yeah.
Heather's face on the right, and the dirt mound on the left.
This is Heather's dialogue she wrote for the film, her film within a film. This is her documentary piece, and this is her intro that we told her to write for this scene.
Yeah, and she so perfectly nails kind of the overly self-important, pretentious
film student
approach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, no irony whatsoever.
Yeah. You can actually see Dan's Cherokee in this. There's Dan's Cherokee.
Yeah, Dan's Cherokee.
The production vehicle.
Oh, we're doing a documentary?
This is a guy that we are a woman named Lisa Dane, who helped us with casting, hooked us up with. And he just lived in Gaithersburg, and Dan and I went over to see him. He's just this guy who does extra work And he was perfect for the part. He was just kind of just awkward enough and just kind of enough, just enough knowledge to nail it.
Okay. This is an amazing scene here.
This is
here.
A good story here.
This is Susie and her little daughter Ingrid, who's a very popular scene, and we knew from the beginning we really wanted to keep it, but totally made up off the top of her head. She was not a planted actor. The three leads just ran across her, and we got all that ad lib.
And then attempted for. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The scene we added in later.
Yeah, that the young dude we added in later.
Yeah.
We shot that's, later.
Yeah, we shot it in April, I guess. It's the last thing we shot for the film. And it's actually that's the only shots in the film that were not shot by the actors.
So we tried to track this woman down for weeks. Private detective, everything, and could not find her. Called, her dad was with her and had this hat from a veterans group and tried to track him down through the veterans group and couldn't do it. So fortunately we had a video release for her and ended up going ahead and using her.
And said, I'm finally finished.
And what did he mean by that?
Well, I guess nobody knew at first, but the police finally went up on the mountain.
Overmodulated truck.
Yeah, the bass is like always blows out there.
What he did is he took... So here's the guy, the reshoot guy.
Mark, yeah. His name is Mark Mason, and he's just this dude that I knew. Actually, a friend of Rick Marino's, the art director. And he's just like this normal dude on the street we just shot.
He's very natural on camera.
Yeah, and he ends up giving you the biggest
clue to the ending.
Yeah, we didn't
take the eyes on him. He could feel the eyes watching him. That's why I made him face.
There it is.
There it is.
Ta-da. Same thing. We tried to track this girl down.
She's a real waitress at the restaurant.
Yeah. Fortunately, we have a signed release. We tracked him down somehow because we found somebody that was kin to him.
What's his name?
Lawrence F. Connor.
But the actors didn't know really who was real and who wasn't. So that's why we get all these natural reactions from people that were actually residents of the town. And then we have guys like this that are actually plants.
Right.
That have the backstory to rehearse to them.
This guy had about a page and a half of stuff to work from, and we tried not to give him all the details because we wanted him to be kind of vague.
And it's so cool how this one little throwaway line that you give him, the "I'm finally finished," has become kind of like this really permanent part of the story now in the comic book.
Yeah.
Now this fence here, this gate is actually Patty's gate, who's our
actually
actress.
Everything you see in this scene, Patty set up. There was no art direction at all in this scene. This is actually where this woman lives.
Well, Patty, we put out flyers at the Montgomery Community College looking for interns, and Patty DeCoux, this actress here, was the only person that signed up. She's like the world's oldest college student, I guess.
But very energetic.
Very energetic.
Very spirited.
You can see it's out of focus because Joshua actually had this set on meters through his... The camera lens was set on meters. The depth of field was off, so he was shooting everything out of focus a little bit, which, you know, is a technical flaw, but it ends up working for the scene and kind of exemplifying, you know, his inexperience, and then trying to cover it up later on in the following scene. It works really well.
Yeah.
But Patty's kind of an interesting story. I mean, we kept hearing stories about her from Ben, the production designer, and everybody that was working on the house to dress it, and they were like, you got to meet this woman, Patty. She's very eccentric, and so Dan and I went up to MC to meet her, and we kind of got a clue as to, you know, that we really wanted her.
How eccentric she really was.
She actually got in the back seat. We took her home, and she chained her pants.
Right in the back seat.
Right in the back seat, right next to Dan. Yeah,
just kind of turning my head out the window.
I was just looking back and going, whoa, what's going on here? Yeah,
but then we went over to her house. We went over to see her house for the first time.
Yeah. Dan and I went over there to give her the...
Now, she's reciting... Here's Heather talking about what Patty was telling her. And Patty really does believe that she's these things that Heather is talking about.
Yeah, she's kind of a strange person.
Now, here's Josh covering his ass.
About the focus. And I think that car back there, that Jetta, is actually like past 94. That's not a...
Yeah, there's
that's
some...
one of the flaws. Yeah. The power bar, too. The flavor of the power bar wasn't out in 94.
That's not a 94 flavor?
No. That's been confirmed.
Really?
The oatmeal raisin wasn't out until like 96 or something like that.
How do we feel
about today, guys?
Okay, the hotel scene.
So yeah. they're not totally intoxicated yet.
No.
Yeah, but they get pretty wild.
They get pretty.
They took their entire all the money we gave them, basically blew it on booze.
Took the money that they borrowed from us, the additional money that they had to borrow from us.
Right. So there's my $20 right there.
Because we tried to set it up where they actually gave them money, production money, to pretend it was their money, but they blew through that after like eight hours.
It was gone.
So and they had to get gas. I mean, they had to be they had to use all that.
Yeah. So they're messed up by now.
Yeah. Josh is getting messed
pretty
up.
Hammered by now.
But it's a great scene because it really kind of sets up and where you identify with the different personalities. Heather trying to maintain control. Mike's kind of the laid back cool guy, and Josh was constantly antagonizing Heather.
And this scene was actually so antagonistic. I mean, it was such a gigantic battle, and Dan and Ned really had to struggle to make them seem like they liked each other at all. I mean, it stretched into this giant night-long argument into another restaurant and all sorts of craziness.
And this scene is really long. I mean, it's like an hour and a half of them in the hotel, and they really get hammered. There's a really cool scene where Josh and Mike are doing poetry, which I hopefully will end up somewhere on a DVD or something. And actually, there's a really cool scene after this with Mike and Heather and Josh at a diner. That takes place that night, which is on the VHS version of the film.
Welcome to day two. The trail is somewhere along here. We shouldn't miss it.
Day two.
Now, we really cut right into the woods. I mean, we struggle with this cut, but we wanted to get them in the woods real early on in the film because that's where things really start happening. And this is the first interaction with people, right before they go into the woods. These two fishermen are like a favorite of the audience.
Yeah, so these two guys, Lisa Dane once again hooked us up with this guy, Bob Griffin. And the other guy, his name is Ed Swanson, and I actually used to play softball with him. And I knew he acted, and I was like, hey, you want to come be in our film? And he was like, sure. I think we paid him like $50.
And their father-in-law and son-in-law in this scene, which I think is so, when you look at the dynamic between them,
it's
and
so
you know
beautiful.
That, it's so great because it's this perfect relationship between these guys.
This scene came out, so much better than I thought it was going to come out.
Yeah.
But all this stuff, like the Mary Brown segment and this segment, is just kind of foreshadowing, the ominous presence of the woods, innocuously just laying it out for the actors, and that you hear these stories and you hear this mythology and everyone's interpretation of it before they go in the woods, and then you start setting it up for the actors prior to the woods,
right? And his line about damn fool kids will never learn kind of seems corny, but then
it's like
when
a Scooby-Doo line,
right,
it's really cool.
It's a total Scooby-Doo line, but then it turns into like he really was
he's really right. We were actually thinking of putting him at the end of the movie.
Saying you darn fool kids.
Saying you damn fool kids didn't learn.
Yeah. It wasn't for you meddling kids.
Yeah, I would have gotten you pesky kids.
It's actually him with a witch mask.
That's actually.
They pull it off and
get in the mystery. But we cut that scene out.
Yeah, didn't really work.
And this is a great road coming right in here to Seneca Creek State Park.
This is Black Rock Road.
Yeah, it's a beautiful road, and this is like our favorite entryway. You kind of descend into the woods, and
it looks like it's in the middle of nowhere.
Right, but there's really like Ed's house is
5 minutes away,
2 miles from there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an old mill historical site right down the
right down the road, right around that corner actually that they just looked down.
Now, this is where, we had the actors, pack up their own stuff and mount their own packs, and we had them, hike these things around. And
they went the completely wrong direction.
Yeah.
They were supposed to go.
This is them going the wrong direction.
They
right
got
here.
Lost for about an hour after this.
But it was a perfect shot. It ended up being, wonderful shot of seeing the isolation of their car. And this is the last image of the car you see. It's great.
The car was our art director's Rick Marino's dad's car.
But I just figured at that time, we were so boned. They got lost off of a road.
Right. Yeah, I thought we were in trouble.
We're just screwed. It's like there's no way we're going to be able to move these guys around the woods for 6 days and ever find them again.
But once they got on track, they did pretty well. This is the beginning of their venture here when they got to Coffin Rock. And they managed to kind of work their way around. This is a
So this part was
good scene.
This little thing was written by Ben Rock, our production designer, who helped with a lot of the mythology. And
this was originally called Hunter's Ridge. Was what we scripted it. We couldn't find a ridge,
so we
came across this cool rock out in the middle of the water, and you know, just on the spot, just named it Coffin Rock because it kind of reminded me of a coffin. So it's kind of stuck, and that's where we had them placed. But that's
our
ridge.
Not Coffin Rock.
Yeah,
that's a hole near Coffin Rock.
Right.
But it still works.
And we went back to Coffin Rock for the sci-fi special with Civil War reenactors to shoot realistic photographs from earlier on in the period.
Yeah, we spent some money on that one little shot there.
Yeah.
It's a cool little shot, though. It ended up in the book, too.
Yeah.
Which is on the DVD, right? The sci-fi special?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought Ben did a great job writing this.
Yeah, it's a great
language.
Yeah.
And Ben went on to write for the sci-fi special.
Right.
So again, it's just another little indication of her Geraldo Rivera-esque, you know, presence in front of the camera,
right,
showing how naive, you know, she really is. And
I think one of the biggest coups of the whole production was Dan and Ed deciding to cast Heather, because I think this Captain Ahab quality that Heather has, none of the other actresses had.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you do believe very, very early on that Heather is going to take these guys wherever she feels she needs to take them to accomplish what she wants to accomplish. And it's awesome. And it was one of those decisions where I just had to trust Ann and Ed because it was so totally opposite of what I was expecting that I was like, well, okay. And I trusted them, and they were 100% right. Probably the best single best decision we made in the whole thing was casting Heather.
This is a great scene because, you know, we wanted we had a lot of arguing, you know, in all the raw footage, and Ed and I had to kind of cull through that and find these moments that were friendly and had some levity in it, so we'd had some, you know, funny parts at the beginning of this film, so you would sympathize with these people as you went on this journey with them.
This is Mike's first big funny line.
He's got some great lines.
Yeah, Mike is the audience's character. I mean, I think he says most everything that everyone thinks in the audience,
exactly.
And that's a perfect example of that.
So Ed figured out that Heather looks really cute in this scene because her eyes are puffy, and he's right. It's kind of odd.
She looks like a cute little girl.
So what's up? Are you happy with the way the documentary's going?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I love this reaction of Mikey's. Somebody makes a noise. I think it's him. It's like,
yeah, it's him.
Check this out.
Yeah, I love that.
What is that?
I mean, what's your take on the Blair Witch at this point? Do you think she exists?
I don't know.
They give us so much good stuff in this movie, man. It's unbelievable how many good lines these guys come up with. And this is a bitch of a hill that they're going up right here.
Those packs are really heavy.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't carrying their tent. They weren't carrying the ground pads or anything like that. We actually moved that stuff ahead for them, but packs were still very, very heavy.
They had to carry all that gear. Mike had that DAT machine slung around his neck the entire time.
Josh had the camera in the top of his pack, and we'll point out some interesting points with the camera in the top of the pack later. And that always gets a huge laugh, which I've never really understood. But
this is a fine example of us making them rough it,
yeah,
if you will.
Right.
They did the duty out there, one and two, the entire
for
six days in the woods.
Yeah. They didn't have a choice.
Yeah. And they may do, more or less. No pun intended. These ones are great. The black and white just has a quality about it, you know. It forces, I think, I mean, because of the weight of the camera to kind of settle and shoot, and this gave us a lot of our moments of steadiness that we had to use to kind of reduce some of the shaky cam.
Yeah, and they really help. Those little moments of black and white really help.
On the longer cuts, on the first cuts, there was so much more of the shakiness.
Now, we had a lot of arguments prior to this, but we wanted this to be the real first argument.
Right.
When they were in the woods and Mike being more the antagonist. When,
In actuality, Joshua has been up to this point, but we wanted to make Mike the antagonist early on and getting a little pissed off at the beginning here, and this is like the first real confrontation.
There's actually a line right after this that we cut out with Josh. Says something really nasty to Heather,
yeah.
And we cut it out because we didn't want Josh to be, like Dan said, the antagonist.
Well, he comes off being like the peacemaker here.
Yeah. Well, because you know, later when Josh disappears, that was a reversal. Mike was originally supposed to be the one to disappear,
leave.
And it just ended up that Josh ended up being the one that we had to take out of the equation so that we could have some kind of different dynamic between the characters.
This is another great Mike Williams moment here. This whole little reaction here is unbelievable.
Although I gotta tell you, I don't fully trust you.
And just
that little look
on
right
his
there.
Face.
Yeah.
Just echoes the sentiments of the audience exactly.
Yeah. This is
nobody's trusting Heather at this point.
This is actually a scene where they stopped and Josh climbed a tree. We had it scripted and it didn't make it into the final cut. But he climbs a tree. It's kind of a funny scene.
And this is my favorite line in the movie.
Yeah.
That, coming
the
up
Josh
from Josh.
Line, yeah.
Think about how cool the fucking cemetery is going to be when we get there.
Dan and our director of photography, Neil Fredericks, were hiding in the woods during this scene. And
on the opposite bank.
Yeah, we're just up to the upper right there. You can't see us, but we were watching them come across.
And we actually have it on video.
Right.
Yeah.
In the making of video of them crossing, and it was a moment of truth for the production, because if they went in, it would have screwed us up for at least a couple of days, if not just killed the production altogether.
Yeah, because not only would they maybe drown, but ruin all the gear that they're carrying.
I don't think they would have drowned. It was like 3 or 4 feet there.
It's pretty deep right there, man.
No, I don't think they would have.
With a 50-pound pack on your back?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a chance.
There's a chance.
If they would have like hit a rock and like if like a piranha, a school of piranhas would have come around.
But you know, they'd had a lot of rain and the streams are way deeper than normal.
And this is where they went off course again. They walked up the whole length of this trail. They kept going for like...
The cemetery's actually just like 30 feet to the left.
It's just to the left, yeah.
And we cut that out.
They walked out up like half a mile at least.
Yeah, so they get here like way later
like
than we were.
Dusk.
We were intending them to get here.
But it works.
Yeah, it works. The lighting works really well.
The look is good. We carried all these rocks up here.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, because the creek, the place
not
where there
too
was
many
rocks
in this
is a
area.
Wild. I mean,
right.
So it's one of my.
And that's a great touch, man. The rocks in the tree
yeah,
is just an
touch.
Awesome little touch.
Bin Rock. I think that was a Bin Rock. Bin Rock special.
Yeah. Just a little added. What the heck does that mean? Yeah.
And all this is like like 5 or 6, 7, 8 people doing all of this stuff. Like just. Barely ahead of the actors, kind of setting everything up, making sure everything's right.
In this scene, she counts the six.
Seven.
And she made that perfect line. She made that perfect. She just said that line perfectly because she goes on to count. There's like 8 or 9 rock piles, but we stopped it at 7 to just kind of have the same thing as
the number
as a
of
Rustin
kids,
Parr
right?
Thing.
Even though 9 was the 9 was the number of the kids that disappeared from Blair originally, right?
Yeah, but that's not really said anywhere.
But, I mean, isn't that where we got the number from?
I don't know.
I think it is.
you're kind of like the captain, and Mike's kind of like your Gilligan.
Yeah, this is probably the most expensive few seconds here of the whole film, getting the rights to Gilligan's Island. Cost us the most.
Okay, yep.
Let's call
yep.
The
it's
rights
well to, worth it.
Yep. Just for this line alone. That's probably the number one laugh line, I think. The skipper line.
I love this shot. The Mike does not want to be there.
You can just tell that he's hating life.
Yeah, because this is, really 9, 10 o'clock at night. It really is cold.
Yeah.
They really do not want to be out of the tent doing this.
During this scene, Dan and I had an idea of... having this low hum throughout the scenes when on the audio as you approach the cemetery,
right?
But it never, we didn't need it.
And that was more for
the
going back to
vision.
The analysis where you have an audio specialist go in and try to figure out what it is.
And they couldn't identify what the sound was.
But this is a great moment where, you know, that's a good line here.
Same thing, only darker.
Yeah.
It's always a good line.
All right. Bag it up. Put it away. Hello?
So this is our first foray into making noise. We leave him alone the first night. The second night we come out. And so all these sounds are me, Dan, Ed, Rick, Tony.
Yeah. Ben. And then we added a lot of stuff at Wilshire Stages.
Right. Just us wearing safety goggles.
Yeah, it was very, very difficult. Actually, you can see all these trees are just like this. They're all dry branches, man. And running through these things, man, you'd poke an eye out in a heartbeat in total darkness.
This is probably Ed almost getting caught.
Yeah, this is actually a lot later on in the scene because I was just supposed to kind of supervise things, but I was like, I'm too close. So I started going back, and I guess they saw me and just started chasing me. It was actually kind of really creepy out there that first night because you sneak up on this tent and they're sleeping. It's kind of like just a strange feeling.
Yeah, we weren't really, you know, at the time we weren't really used to being out at the woods at 3 o'clock in the morning yet.
Yeah.
Now we cut this scene down tremendously because Heather really went over the top on bitching out the guys that night. We had to kind of tone that down.
She really insulted them and. So
that was one of the first occasions that you guys actually.
It's actually the only time
walked
that
up to
we
her
up
actually.
There.
Yeah,
yeah, and
because it was really the first big scene.
Yeah, it was totally over the top.
Yeah,
we took them off individually and talked to them and about what was going on. And
this is a great moment too.
Mike Williams, great moment number four.
And this is Heather right here. Being really, really good within her character, I think, responding to what Dan and Ed told her, where now she's trying to go back and within the context of what actually happened the night before, make things right so that she can start over. And it doesn't really come across so much because Dan and Ed edited it out, but she had to do this to kind of set things straight so she could...
Well, yeah, we basically told her she had to apologize or she was going to lose her crew.
Right.
Because she was already losing them. And this scene just kind of like... it's a culmination of their frustration towards her.
And it's perfect for the rain. I mean, even though we had to reset for this night, but the rain really just kind of adds to the whole, duress of being tired and lost, and now on top of it, it's raining.
And it's the last thing they want to deal with. It literally rained for 24 hours straight without let up.
What basically happened is that now, at the end of this day, they got to their campsite, and they got there, and the tent was completely soaked. Their sleeping bags were soaked. And for the first time ever, we were not in radio contact with them because the rain killed us, too. We were moving the base camp.
We were moving slower. They were moving faster.
They usually stay throughout the regular days. They usually stop and kind of look at things and hang out under the trees and stuff. But because it was raining, they really made a beeline to the next waypoint on the GPS.
Yeah, and they missed a drop. Yeah. They missed one of the notes.
They totally skipped one.
They
right?
totally skipped them while they got there, and we had already removed them because we thought that
they had already been there.
Yeah, and it just killed us. So they ended up at somebody's house.
And this is a great moment here. Composed shot. It's one of my favorites.
And that look from Mike.
Yeah,
that's a great moment number five.
Five.
We've been in the middle of nowhere for 2 days. You can imagine how easy it is to act frustrated.
when you're this miserable. So what ended up happening is that they spent the night at the hotel tonight, at a hotel.
The Red Roof Inn. Right.
And then we reset the next morning and sent them out again, and they basically repeated this day.
Yeah.
But it was sunny, and it was nice, and the wind was out, and, there was wind, and the emotional level didn't match, so we kept the rain day.
Right.
And there's actually a cut here from one day to the next.
Right. And so this is what causes us...
to break scenario.
Right, so then they break scenario, but then the next day is when we double those nights. That's when we actually had to go in for a couple of reasons. Right?
No.
No, it was just technical. It was purely technical.
No, this night was just normal.
No, this
night... We doubled the night because the tent seemed more...
Right, no, that's what I'm saying. But this night, they're in the hotel...
Right, and then
the next night, we doubled it up.
This is actually the next day.
This is the next day at the end.
We had to really
put the light down that make it dark so you couldn't tell it wasn't raining because it wasn't raining.
Yeah, we did it on the Media 100. If you can tell that Mike's not wearing the rain jacket, and we added rain in the background. But it works. Nobody really notices. Yeah. Nobody's brought it up.
It's feasible that the rain just stopped.
But it's also a really good moment because they're really starting to get on Heather's case about needing to be at work. You know, they need to return the DAT machine. It's just, you know, now they're being forced to sleep together on the night that they weren't supposed to be out there. And the tension's almost palatable here in this scene.
There's actually some cool moments on this night that we obviously had to completely cut out of them just messing around the campfire and Heather kind of trying to gain their trust again. And it's kind of a nice scene. I hope it ends up somewhere.
There's some sound effects added in later. But this is a great, the method approach we took to this when Heather's really cold and you can see her shake this camera and just really gives you a feeling of how chilly it is out there.
Yeah, it was cold this night.
And if you want to hear this scene the way it was actually recorded without the extra sound effects, you can see it on the Sci-Fi Channel special, Curse of the Blair Witch, because we actually used... used a pre sound mix.
Pre-remix. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's a lot more subtle. I mean, because you're really just depending on what the mic on that video camera can pick up. And they are freezing here.
So are we.
Yeah, it was cold.
Yeah, but we're dressed in thick clothes and running around.
Yeah.
Did you notice they don't go walking around as much?
No, they stay near the tent. So at this point, we ran around their tent probably for about half an hour, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And then we had to set up the rock piles for the next day, and we had the three backpacks about 30 feet from the tent, all filled with rocks. And so after this scene, we actually just went, over to this area that we were meeting, and all of us just... It was a cool little moment. We laid there for about half an hour to an hour until they went to sleep again so that we could lay the rock piles next to their tent while they were sleeping. But that didn't work.
They heard us.
I mean, we had to walk so slow, and it was just a matter of...
And it was in the fall, so the leaves are so dry. Any twig you stepped on, it was crackling just
like,
around.
And you had to walk so. So we just, it was like... By that time, it was like 3 or 4 in the morning. We were like ready to go to sleep, so...
So we just walked up there and started... We just
yelled a taco.
Yeah, taco was the actor's code word to
this
break.
This is not scenario.
This is not scenario. We're doing something. So
right. Don't
come out of the tent.
And
we
then
told
yeah.
Them.
And then I told him, don't come out of the tent until morning.
So they do a really great job, I think, of the next morning pretending to be surprised because they knew that we had been out there. They could hear what we were doing.
This is absolutely fucking crazy.
So this is not the night that we doubled.
No,
we ended up doubling up because of
the tent,
the technical problems with the light.
Yeah,
the light took a shit on us on the
next night.
Yeah, right, so we did not double that night. We went straight through. Right,
I think that's Ed's pile. I think that's Ed's pile.
That looks like Dan and Tony.
That's Ben. I think that might be Ben or Greg's pile. This is my pile.
That's your pile for sure.
Josh, actually,
I know my pile from anybody's pile.
Oh yeah, we know your pile too, man. You lay a lot of piles.
There was a great scene when Josh kicks the rocks.
Yeah, he actually kicks it, and that was kind of like the beginning of the.
He kicked
end
it at the cemetery
him.
Too.
But we just figured it was a little
too much,
too much foreshadowing for the fact that Josh was going to get.
Yeah, but this is a great composition shot with it, where Mike and.
But I find
this are off.
This
in
is like
distance.
One of the inconsistencies in the movie that in the story that I don't like is the fact that if they wanted to leave so much, why aren't they unpacking? Why aren't they packing
the
tent?
Why haven't they packed up? Right.
Which is it bugs me.
Yeah.
It's really just them being lazy.
Being lazy.
Not wanting to pack their shit up.
Put the fucking camera down. Let's pack up the tent. Let's get
okay,
the
hang on.
Okay. Come on. No, I'm not fucking scared. I'm just tired. I'm hungry.
There's actually a cool little scene here with Josh and Mike over on the edge without Heather while Heather's shooting the 16 stuff where Mike is completely telling, accusing Heather of setting the rock piles up to Josh. And it's a really good scene.
If
anyone's playing head games, you're playing head games, but I'm not playing head games.
I don't have it. We have to go.
So now Mike's look is great because,
yeah, you, because you know.
Because you know.
And people laugh in the theaters too.
Sometimes. Yeah. Mike has already kicked the map in the creek.
So not cool, man.
And now you look back at him and you can totally see that he's lying.
Yeah,
he's trying to cover his ass.
To me, this is one of the most amazing acted scenes in the film because it's literally no cuts for about a minute and it's just tight. It's just there's no way to do this scene better.
After map check yesterday, you've always had the map.
I know, and I've always had the map in the same place, and if it's not there, one of you had to have taken it.
I'm not going into your fucking pants to get your goddamn map.
I love this look of hers right here.
Look, would I go in and get your map? All I want to do is get out of here, man. I'm not.
I think she's
around.
Had quite a bit enough of Josh.
No, you want to stay here. You want to film, right?
It just establishes this whole first-person POV because they start shooting, you know, fairly innocently, and then they get into an argument. It's almost that they forget the camera's on. You get the sense that, you know, because the camera's off kilter, and he's just walking around with this thing on his shoulder.
It's probably one of the longest time that Heather's on camera, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
This is a great scene, because it sets up so much for that map scene later on.
Yeah, and this is another beautiful, accidental composition. Mm. Man, that's awesome.
And he just turns around right at the right moment.
Yeah.
But Joshua later on, we cut it out, but Joshua does actually later on forces Heather to unpack her pack.
Right. We just missed
Josh
him
on the
flopping
camera.
Down.
There you go.
Flopping down from a full standing position right
camera
onto
the
camera.
Yeah. Onto the camera.
Yeah. Actually, the camera was gone already at this point. This is the day that he had already broken it.
He had
broken
it. Right.
Dan and I waited for them. They crossed another log, and we waited for them on the other side, and Josh said, the camera's broken.
Right.
We were like, what do you mean the camera's broken? The lens fell off the camera. What do you mean the lens fell off the camera? So we took this camera like a baby. And if Neil Fredericks, our DP, is like, it was a nightmare. We were like, are you going to tell him? I don't want to tell him.
It's his baby.
It's his baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, he treats that camera, or he treated that camera.
Until he sold
anymore.
It on eBay for $10,000.
Exactly.
There's only so much a baby is worth.
Yeah.
Now.
But it was right prior to this when we decided to take Joshua out.
Yeah, by this time I think we had decided.
Yeah, it's like right before they crossed that creek, they were arguing so much. We just finally settled on. Josh lost his necklace out in the woods.
Yeah, the tooth was lost.
We'd like to try to find that again and sell it on eBay or something.
You could get a lot of money for that on eBay.
Yeah.
And he actually asked us to go out in the woods and look for it.
Next time I'm in Maryland, I'm gonna go look.
We'll get that for you right away, Josh.
Make some money.
Well, let's try it this way.
So this is I think my favorite scene. I think this is the scene, you know, kind of a pivotal moment where the audience, you can kind of hear the audience
shift,
laugh at the beginning of the scene and then realize they are really, really in deep shit.
But what I like about this crossing the creek thing is Mike starts losing it here.
Yeah.
And this is like the first time he starts, you know, not giving a damn what's going on. And he starts to crack up. And they really become insubordinate at this stage.
And really what's going on here in this scene is that Michael Williams, the actor, is the only one that knows that he kicked the map into the creek. And he's waiting for the moment to release this information.
Right. Yeah, he's got his own separate character motivation that he's carrying along with him.
And he's just waiting.
And when he unleashes it is just perfect. I love to kind of like tilt my head and watch the expression on their face change in the course of this scene where they go from laughing at the beginning to being like, holy shit, they're really messed up now.
I just want to know that you have it.
It's not quite like the penis reveal in Crying Game, but it's pretty good.
It's pretty close.
Here's the lazy bird from Joshua.
Yeah,
the trademark white
trash lazy bird.
There you go, man.
I'm not even going to straighten my finger out.
Well, I find it very cool that I get laughed at because my shoes are wet for the rest of the day. I find that fucking hilarious.
And again, man, this is the audience is like, I mean, Josh is doing the same thing, but everybody in the audience wants to make fun of Heather, I think, at this point. And so Mike, totally cracking up. They're kind of playing along.
I'm sorry. It's fucked up. It's fucked up, but I can't.
I kicked that fucking map into the creek yesterday.
And everyone laughs, and you hear gasps about this point. Like, people are like, is he kidding?
Right. And he made that up. Kicking the map in the river was Mike did that out of just real frustration. There was the map. He was sick of messing with it, and he kicked it into the creek.
He thought the other guys would see it, but they didn't.
Fucking hope
Mike,
he's
are you fucking kidding?
I like this because here's the difference in weight between Josh and Mike.
Yeah.
Mike with a pack, one hand, takes Josh and like slings him around like a rag doll. This is from being on the farm team for the Yankees. It was that conditioning from,
from like weight, that weight training.
In the original biographies that Mike provided us. He said that he had played for the New York Yankees and the farm system. It was a total lie, and it ended up going out to like every bit of press. You know, all the biographies went out, and everybody's thinking that Mike played on the farm system for the Yankees.
But this scene was cut up a lot too. There were moments that were.
There's a couple.
We wanted to be a little more expedient and not have so much, you know, arguing.
Yeah.
You know, we had to kind of walk that line between having too much over the top.
Well, also, and Heather just, she became, the audience came out and they thought she was so abrasive and so bitchy. And we went back after the Sundance cut and before the theatrical cut, and we went back and cut some stuff out that she says that. Just to make her a little more sympathetic.
They have a whole other exchange here, too, that kind of cut out.
After this, we cut it out, which is a great line, but it's just too much.
And, you know, that's one example of, you know, we started out with a 2-hour and 45-minute cut that we showed to an audience at the Enzian Theater in Orlando. Two and a half hour cut that we showed to audiences, and a test audience at the Enzian, and kind of refined it from there and did another test screening, refined it from there. So we were, you know, judging, taking audience reaction and kind of doing our own little test marketing to refine the edit of the film.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I haven't heard too many people talk about, but I really think that Dan and Ed did a phenomenal job with the editing of this entire film. And I think, especially if you see, you know, I'm not sure what scenes are going to end up on the DVD, but especially when you see some of these other scenes and how they may have or may not have been integrated into the film. It's
a large amount of material.
Here's another perfect accidental composition. Perfect.
The Chewbacca.
Boom. Boom. Yeah, boom. The Chewbacca.
I even envisioned it being that way before she shot it, knowing it would never happen, and it happened.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I remember when Lonnie Glarman, Rick Marino were building that Chewbacca, big Chewbacca stick man, and we were all laughing at them. It was like, where are you going to put that thing? It looks goofy. And it ends up being pretty much the best stick man in this scene.
Yeah.
The two times you see it, it's like it really makes an incredible impression on you.
But these woods were, this whole scene is pretty long, but these woods are like right over a flight pattern.
Yeah.
You know,
Seneca Creek is.
We had State Park. Especially here, man, you just heard like a jet like every 2 minutes cruising overhead that we had to
second
deal
biggest
with
expense of the film was the twine that connected.
Yeah, the $9 ball of twine.
Hated.
The $9 twine. That's my stick man right there. That's my stick man.
That's mine right there.
That one?
Yep. The one with the multi-stick torso.
So it's so funny because these sticks have ended up being this really frightening icon, and there's the Chewbacca. And when you go back, you think about the day that we did this.
Goofballs in the woods.
It's like 10 of us out there on this kind of one of the only casual days that we really had in pre-production, and we just kind of spin it out there.
There's a Mike Williams great moment number 7 or 8 or whatever.
Right. No redneck, this creative.
I didn't even fucking see these, man.
Oh, he said fuck.
No, he didn't.
Mm-mm. I don't think they say that in this movie.
No. Actually, there's a really great Christian right-wing review of the film.
Oh, and did you read that?
Yeah.
It's
a trip.
137?
137 of the filthiest...
The foulest of foul words. This is great here, the way... And then Josh is just kind of breaking down. He's just like getting to the point now where they're getting hopeless.
And again, I think that's a good example of how you go ahead and let things happen off screen. In a normal film, you would have a big scene of Josh breaking down and crying, and in this, it's like a 2 second glimpse as he walks off, as he walks out of frame.
And they've crossed over. I mean, the Stickmen kind of represent, you know,
that
you
point.
Know, they've the point of no return, you know, and you're dreading this night as it comes up. You wanted that sense of dread every night just coming, relentless.
That's Josh wearing the neck warmer that he had to have because he would break out into hives if he got cold. These are all things, of course, that we learn after he's there. Oh, yeah, I can't get cold or I'll break out into hives. Ah, okay.
The sounds that you hear of these kids are actually these two kids that live across the street from my mom, that my mom used to babysit, and Tony Cora, our sound guy, recorded them just playing and reading and talking gibberish. And he recorded them on 3 separate cassette tapes, and we had 3 separate boom boxes out there. So the first one we woke them up basically by playing a boombox of these little kids' voices outside their tent. And Mike said that, you know, it was probably the most frightening part of the film for him.
We had
experience.
It was one of the most logistically challenging scenes too. We had to in advance kind of mark out an escape path for these guys to run down. This is where they're running right now.
Right. So that's us shaking the tent.
And so they wouldn't poke their eye out or anything like that. So we had to leave that in the directing notes to the way the tent was facing. You run in the direction of the opening of the tent, and we had markers for them to find in advance. And then whenever they do the actual scene, they could run down this trail and not kill themselves.
Yeah, because Dan and Ed had to scout out and find a place that actually had
a
clear path.
The Rick Marino reaction right there.
That's Heather reacting to Rick Marino dressed in white long johns with white stockings, white pantyhose pulled over his face, running along beside him.
Well, it was either Rick Marino or Dave Poole
who fell in
the creek. Because we did this, what happened in this scene is that we had some technical problems, and we actually had to go back and restage it the next night. So the next night, you see, we actually did a double night. We did this night, and then we did the next night.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite shots there. Yeah. The one where Heather turns around.
And you can see
the
sun is kind of rising on that shot in the film. But it looks cool. Cool.
And we lost, that's because we lost the band, the drive band on the CP.
And the light wouldn't come on.
Yeah,
it was a nightmare.
Yeah, the light quit.
And it was so cold.
This is the coldest day I remember. This morning was the coldest I remember being.
And we had the most people out there because everybody wanted to see.
Right, and the only time somebody fell into the creek.
Yeah, it was so cold.
We all ended up taking off different sections of our clothes to give that guy...
Give Dave
different sections of our clothes so he wouldn't freeze to death.
Because, I mean, we're probably a good, you know, half a mile in the woods.
At least.
Good hike
probably
out in the middle.
Mile,
right?
Yeah, because this is actually...
This is the furthest location.
The furthest location. Yeah. Furthest location, coldest night, only night somebody fell in the creek.
And you remember going out there when we were first looking for the tent? We had, like, all of us hiking around that tent. We couldn't see it.
Right.
We walked by that tent when they were sleeping in that tent several times, and we were finally, hey, it's over here, it's over
this
here.
This shot reminds me of that R.E.M. album.
Totally.
Cover.
Murmur.
Yeah, totally. Murmur. Exactly what it looks like. So, and this is on the real day.
Yeah.
This is on the real day.
It's a slime moment.
The slime day.
Yeah. And we had to decide that we were going to take Josh out because we knew we were going to slime whoever was going to disappear.
But the mythical supernatural slime is actually KY jelly that we use.
And you kind of miss it, but Heather had stolen one of the stick figures. That's one of the stick figures right there.
Yeah,
so
she
Heather
takes
had stolen
it.
One of it, so we broke it up and placed his slimed canteen in the middle of it. And the only way that you know that she stole it is
Josh's
line a little later about stealing one of the trinkets.
Relax for just a second. Have we gotten everything here? Like I give a whose shit was thrown around?
Who
specifically?
This is another example of... They want to leave, but they're not packing up the tent. Lazy eye. Look,
right,
weren't they packing it?
They're not packing because they know we're going to come.
We're going to come and pack it.
So it's like, well, let's don't take the realism that far. Let's not pack the tent. Now, she bit the shit out of him, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
They're fighting and she bites him.
Wow. But they make up here in this next shot, so everything's okay.
And that's Mike's real character coming through there because
he's the greatest guy.
Yeah. And I think he was really, you know, because I think they were really letting out some emotions and Mike really got pissed at her and got physical with a woman. And I think, you know, then it kind of hit him. Holy crap. I'm like throwing Heather around. And he's so strong. He is a very strong guy. So very sexy in that way.
Yeah, he's very strong.
There's another finger. You got to catch mm-hmm. that one. And here, watch Heather's ear shift.
It's an important scene,
watch,
too.
Watch the ears.
It's an important scene here, too, because this is where, you know, Joshua kind of mentions that this is a separation of reality. You know, Heather looks through this camera, kind of removes her from reality. So kind of a little tidbit of why she would continue shooting through all that's going on, escapism.
Did you guys prompt them on that line? Did you guys prompt them to say something like, for him to take the camera?
No, I don't think so.
No? I mean, that's a perfect line. I mean, that you needed perfect. That line. You needed that line.
I haven't read the directing notes in a while, but I don't think we did.
You needed that line of him of him realizing what she was doing, because the audience needs to know. The audience needs to know, wow, that's why she would keep taping.
Yeah, I don't think we prompted him.
I love the composition on this shot here, too.
Yeah, again, perfect.
But she's just relentless, you know, she's... You know, let's move forward. She's not sure where the hell she's going, but she wants to keep going forward. Josh was kind of giving up here.
What the fuck was this blue?
But here's some subtleties in the sound again, you know, where in the new mix where you're hearing birds and crickets and things like that,
and
you start reducing it as each day goes on. We deaden the woods more and more. These cricket changes and subtleties like that just add to the ambience that weren't in the original cut.
I think this is you'd really have to go to an effort in a regularly shot film to have the continuity of their exhaustion be as subtle as it is. But you can really tell at this point that they are tired.
Well, that's the whole reason why we shot it this way. In the real time, you know, knowing that we had just thinking at that time that we'd use just several moments of this stuff, that we wanted to maintain that continuity.
I probably have some special forces stories that I could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a few special forces stories, Greg?
It's a great scene. You know, I like this. She's basically, this is the mutiny here.
Yeah. And kind of this adolescent, you know,
right.
Totally immature, but not unlike something that we might do. So this is one of the times we're trying to, like, draw the line thin between is this a natural occurrence or is there actually something supernatural going on by the fact that they could go south all day and still end up at the same place.
And, coming up is also probably the most favored line of the right-wing Christian webpage.
Yes. I had to cough over this line when I showed it to my grandmother.
It's a great, great moment for Heather, too, man. She just really gets into it here, lets it all hang out.
Here's another great accidental composition when she lets the camera fall and it frames her face up.
You guys caught a lot of reaction, too, from Josh.
There's the line.
That's
there
the cough.
It is. It's my favorite. Yeah, I love how you can, like, just see the tear that I'm coming down her face here, coming down her side of her nose a little bit.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go to camp? I mean, I guess today south didn't work out, so tomorrow we'll go east. I don't know what to say, Josh.
So we kind of used the creek as... The creek was kind of our through line during the whole production as far as moving them up and down and across the creek.
What was that? Was that me? What's that?
That was dinner.
That was the creek.
That was the creek.
This is an awesome scene. And I think she's really lost it here, man.
Yeah, this is
her academy.
Yeah, this is my moment. This is my favorite scene in the movie.
This is her Oscar clip.
Initially, I thought that this was scene was over the top.
Yeah, remember you guys initially cut it out.
Movies, Heather.
But I think it really works because again, I think it's one of those things where Josh is saying things that that needs to be said for the audience. The audience need to hear these things said.
I thought it was a little weird too, but then every time I would show it to somebody, their first reaction to watching it for the first time was like they were just amazed by it. So I figured most of the audience is going to be seeing it for the first time. They're not going to be seeing it, you know, 150 times like we have. So they're not going to get so annoyed by it like we were.
I got first watch.
I think it's easier to take two the way you guys had edited it so that he wasn't quite as antagonistic. And you can kind of play this scene off as Josh snapping.
And it's kind of, it's very justified, though, the way she's been acting, you know?
You're angry in the wood, and no one here is here to help you. There's a fucking witch, and she keeps leaving shit outside your door. There's no one here to help you. She left little trinkets. You fucking took one of them. She ran after us. There's no one here.
And this is a good switch for Mike, too, I think, character-wise, where he defends her.
There's no one here to help you. That's your motivation.
Love the way her fingers look in this scene.
Kind of. I love the way her ear looks in this scene.
No, she's still making movies, man. That's my point. This is my point here.
There's a good moment right before this where Mike really breaks down. It's a really good scene, but it just didn't further the plot much, so we cut it out. Hopefully that'll end up somewhere.
There was a lot of times where it seemed to me that, like, from the original cut, the characters were kind of going through similar emotional things. So you would end up with three really good scenes at each pivotal moment from each character. And you guys were kind of having to decide which character gets to have that scene.
I think it's kind of natural for an actor to kind of, you know, want a moment, especially with all that they were going through, want a moment to just unwind and let it all out like this. You know, Mike did it right before this. And
I love how the bottom of her legs are. Sorry about that. I had to catch that moment.
Well, I'm cold, man.
I know.
I hear you.
The smallest comforts you could get are good.
And again, I think this is one of those unscripted moments where she's sewing his pants. I think you guys talked about how wonderful that maternal.
Yeah, she displays that a lot when she's trying to maintain control and it's okay. She's trying to, you know, battle with what's going on in herself and also try to maintain some kind of, like you said, maternal control over what's going on. This is when we see Josh as well.
His mashed potato line is better explained by a scene that got cut out. That might appear somewhere.
And I like the, again, we got away with things I think that you would never think about getting away with in a normal film. Her dialogue is done with a flashlight in her mouth during this whole scene. I mean, you can hardly understand what she's saying. And I think it's that kind of thing that, you know, people know that kind of stuff is real, but you know, you wouldn't allow yourself, I don't think, on a normal set circumstance to put a flashlight in a character's mouth while they're doing dialogue.
It's really good use of the sound here, too. I mean, those crickets are really subtle, but they...
So I
think you hear some birds here. There's a couple of calls in the background that you hear kind of exemplifying the isolation, hopelessness.
And you guys had to go back and re-edit the POV of the camera, right, to make it less shaky.
This is a very shaky scene. But it also, I think this is the one where it's the most justified because it's the most frenetic state of mind Heather's in. You know, she's just panicking now. And it really, I think it's kind of justified that you see kind of the delirium that's in her mind at this point.
I think waiting for Josh to come out of the tent was the coldest I was on the shoot.
Yeah, that was very cold. Basically, we left a note in Josh's canister that said, wait till the other two actors go to sleep and then come out of the tent and look for the flashlight. So Greg and I stood out there for about half an hour to 45 minutes, and finally we were like, what's going on with him? And we finally called him up. Remember, we're like, Josh, Then he finally came out and we were gone. It was freezing. He was very happy to leave, too.
Yeah, he wanted to go see Jane's Addiction, I think, on Friday.
The shot coming up is one of my favorite shots. It's a really well-composed shot where they're just trying to decide which way they should be walking.
Another
this one's right here.
Michael Williams moment number 11.
Yeah. It's all accidental, but...
Well, South didn't work.
Kind of shows the isolation.
The Wicked Witch of the West was a bad one.
You can just hear how tired she is in her voice.
What the hell's that?
Josh? Josh?
We're gonna put up the tent.
I love the way you guys had this, showing them how they set up the tent.
It was originally longer. We had, you know, a lot more of this, and we had some jump cuts of them, this progression of them setting up this tent, but we just went with the one shot. I mean, we felt it was enough that you see that they, out of everything else they're doing, they still have to set up that damn tent every night.
And there was quite a bit of editing that you guys had to do here because Mike had gone and really gone extreme with the whole, with his whole character of kind of going crazy whole situation.
That's the next morning.
But this is from that day, is it not?
No, this is the night. It's the next day that he goes crazy.
Oh, it's the next day after this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Here they're just hungry and they're talking about, you know, and they actually were hungry. What were we down to at this point, Greg? Feeding them wise? Like what?
At this time, I think we were giving them a power bar and a piece of fruit, I think an apple, and then we always gave them enough water for a day, but I think at this point it was a power bar and an apple a day at this point for the last 2 days.
So this is Greg and Josh and I over up on a hill, and I'm just cueing Josh to make noises, and we're just sitting there.
This is the last thing Josh had to do before he went home.
Before he went home, yeah.
We drug his butt out there and made him scream for a while.
And then we had that Jane's Addiction concert.
Yeah, during the day we had him record the last scene, his calls for the last scene.
And this is one of my favorite shots with Mike's breath. Mike's
Josh!
Breath.
Mm. Josh, where are you? Tell me where you are!
And it really amazed us when we first got some of the dailies back from this Hi-8 camera, how well the sound picked up off that little Hi-8 hi-fi stereo mic on the top of that camera. You can even hear with it even enhanced, but you know, you can get the ambience of that, of those woods and the separation. It's pretty amazing what that mic picked up.
Josh!
Love that. This is kind of weird when we were shooting this because we're sitting up on the hill and all you see is this little flash of light down at the bottom of the ravine kind of moving around. And we were up there for like a good 45 minutes and the whole time kind of, except for the screams, wondering what they were doing. You know, we're there, but we really don't know what they're doing with their characters.
Yeah, and Heather actually pulled out the CP16, but the light died right away. So we decided to cut it out of the scene altogether.
There's some wind effects in there, huh?
Yeah, there's little touches in there. We kind of shuffled around Joshua's screams there, too. We had some better screams here and there, and we moved around a little audio with Heather's voice. You know, she had a little better moments, and, you know, we just kind of, we had the luxury of being able to do that because most of the dialogue was off camera.
Whatever it is, where's the Josh who's gone?
I think this is a cool scene because they're still doubting, you know, as the characters, they're kind of doubting what is the nature of this thing that is after us. Is it Josh? Is it a person with Josh? Is it something that can imitate Josh? They kind of, again, they do a great job of asking all the questions that the audience is asking, I think. So here's the infamous stick bundle.
The one that Heather threw away and then did not go and look at.
Right. Yeah, fortunately, I think Ben Rock, right, was watching them do this scene.
Well, he went to drop off the basket.
He wanted to watch the reaction because he was so excited about them finding the teeth.
And she ended up tossing it
and
not opening it.
Right.
I had to go back and tell her to open up the bundle of sticks.
So Ben called us up on the radio and he's like, they're walking away and they're not looking at the sticks. So we had to come back out, and fortunately we caught them before they took off and said, you know, look, you really need to go and check out the bundle of sticks.
Now this is really like the one moment of the whole Mike freakout scene that we used. We had about 35 minutes worth of footage of Mike going through this whole breakdown in this area, and Heather was shooting. It was pretty good stuff, but it just didn't contribute to the plot, so we cut it out. Because we needed Mike to have a little bit of composure when they do the final scene, and we couldn't have him really going over the top and then coming back again too much.
So, I mean, we thought that him just going back and forth, rocking back and forth was enough of a...
Yeah.
Like he is about to lose it, you know.
We debated on this shot, too, a little bit, because it's the one shot where you have a two-shot. And we wanted to make sure that we showed Heather laying the camera down and then getting that two-shot off.
Yeah, because people got confused by that. Right. So the test screens are like, why are you shooting
that? It's only the second. We only do that twice.
But it shows Heather's kind of forced embrace of Michael in that shot, which I think is...
A little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And this is, again, one where, I mean, she throws the camera down in between her legs, basically. And it's this, you know, like, great view of her opening up the bundle. And these are teeth from my dentist, Dr. Gamichia.
And Lisa Dane's teeth.
And yeah. Lisa Dane's teeth, too. And really Josh's hair.
I love the shadow here. We just caught her shadow where she's got her hand on her forehead.
Yeah.
And let's see. I would say that number one guess for what's in the bundle is finger.
Finger or tongue.
Finger or tongue. I actually had a woman that thought it was his manhood.
Yeah, his testicles.
But her spleen.
It is teeth, yeah, or just internal organs. Yeah. I think it's because you really don't have a sense of scale because of the way she shoots it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be a very small
spleen. It looks
like
meat. It looks like some meat.
Right. I think that's a clump of hair with blood in it.
Now here she is, just keeping it away from Michael, what just happened, and trying to maintain some kind of, again, this maternal instinct in her, trying to maintain some sense of normalcy of what's going on in front of Mike. She's very protective of him.
I always like that. It was an out, damn spot, like a Shakespearean thing.
It's my favorite moments here, where she's just kind of losing it, and when she picks up that backpack.
This scene here is kind of like a little bit out of focus, a little bit, because she had she pressed the digital zoom. And luckily, somebody caught it. One of them caught it and then turned it off for this shot.
After all that's going on, she's got to put on her backpack.
I love the fact that her hair gets caught.
And then her hair gets caught. Just a little touch.
And it's just so pitiful. It just makes you feel hopeless. So sorry for her.
And this is when, like, the sympathy.
Yeah.
It really is what you're feeling for her at this point.
Oh, my hair is caught. I mean, you can't tell me, man, that she's just not really getting some stuff out at this point, man. It's just too real. And I love this blank. So she has this thousand-yard stare in this scene that is so great.
It's just so hopeless at this point, you know, like the compasses, you know, don't work.
Exactly.
Nothing's really working. You know, what direction do you pick to walk in? You just, you know, what looks decent. This is so hopeless. Like, oh, well. So she ends up walking back in the same direction she was before. You can hear her feet dragging. She's so tired.
We needed some time on this day because it was so short, and we needed something before the last night.
I think it's one of the best parts of the editing there, though, because you create such a suspense.
Yeah, well, there's nothing happening. They're just breaking down.
It's great.
And this scene kind of saved us from having to change the date. Mm-hmm. They talked about having us change the date for 1994, and we're like, well, the Cal Ripken line doesn't work.
Yeah. It's also a sense of almost like this desperation, but combined with boredom, you know, that this whole, it just makes you take a breather here before the final rush, the final climax of the movie, which is her confessional in that final scene, but you're taking a kind of a mental breather here because there's
and
no,
the sun's
where
going
do you
down
go? Yeah.
For the final time.
I mean, what can you? I mean,
yeah, this scene kind of speaks
really,
for itself.
Yeah, you really can't say much.
Let's just be quiet.
I think this
let's
is
just
more
watch
of a...
the snot.
Except that we do want to point out that this snot fissure at the end of the scene, which didn't make the final cut, is just, you know, it's like a waterfall of phlegm comes
Heather
out of her
has
nose.
A lot of phlegm in this scene.
You very just get to see the very just the beginning.
Probably now become one of the most faucet. Famous pair of nostrils.
And we had somebody email us once and said those were fake tears. They were coming out of the wrong side of her eye.
Coming out of the...
So it's all...
And we've also had people say that you can see the reflection of people standing nearby her.
Well, there's more than one light there. She's got several lights on her. Look at the reflection.
And she thought she was actually framing her whole face.
Yeah. It was zoomed in. Yeah. That
we weren't lost. So this really great framing was accidental. There's a little bit of snot action here, though.
Yeah.
There's some snot action at the end, man.
Believe I mean, it pours out at the end. I was wondering when we were at the premiere and it's up on that really big screen and Heather's watching it, and I'm like, wow, what is it like to have your nose hairs be that
exposed
in front of all these people?
But when we originally scripted this scene, it was just basically, you know, we wanted Heather to go out and kind of apologize and, you know, do her little confessionals. And so she just took the camera off by herself and came up with this dialogue on her own and just, you know, really just gave us a moment that you don't see in films too often, if at all.
And the line about, I'm too scared to close my eyes and too scared to open them, that's like... Brilliant, man. She came up with some good stuff. There's some good snot there.
I'm scared to close my eyes.
Yeah.
I'm scared to open them.
This is really pretty brave of her to allow herself to be seen like this, you know? I mean, you look at her even in the scene where her eyes are puffy and all that. It's just rare that you find an actress willing to expose themselves like that.
This is like the logistic, one of the toughest scenes, the toughest scene to shoot, where we had, Joshua was gone by this time, so we pre-recorded his voice, his yells, in boom boxes, and Ed was standing outside the fence, or outside the tent, with the boom box, to lead them out of the tent, and then we had one at the top of the house, in the attic, or not the attic, but in the top room of the house, and we had one in the basement where Greg and I were hanging out. We had to guide them through this trail that we carved out. Yeah.
So this scene and the scene before are the ones that were shot in Patapsco, and the rest is
shot in Seneca.
At Seneca.
And
this is shot in Patapsco.
Oh, okay. I thought you said the other way around. Sorry. This is Patapsco.
I think that's what I said.
I'm sorry.
But when they're seeing, this is the first take. So when Mike sees this house for the first time, you hear his reaction. It's genuine. They don't know they're coming on a house here.
But then later you cut to the second take. Right?
This is a creepy image right here when they cut to the 16 and you see the house for the first time.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Great image.
I always thought the boards to the left of the door looked like the Dead Kennedys logo.
Yeah.
But the house, again, serendipity working for the project. Matt Compton just found that house, right? He's out looking for locations and found it. And this was our biggest piece of art department. We pretty much all hands on deck. Stephanie and Carolyn and Fahad all came out, and your little cousins again, right? Same little cousins?
No, Rick's nephews.
Rick's nephews.
Came out and did the handprints. And then all the graffiti had to be removed from the walls. Some of the floors had to be reinforced.
Yeah, the whole house was covered with graffiti, so we had to basically repaint it outside.
This is the noose, which is an electrical bar.
We had no idea what people were talking about when they mentioned the noose. Until after Sundance. The mantle, Sundance.
The famous mantle. The
famous Rustin Parr mantle.
We actually shot, we had a guy pose as a Rustin Parr shooting that mantle, more of a 40s photo of that mantle piece to make it a comparison in the original vision of the film, but we never used it.
So here, this is pretty much real time from the moment they find the house. We've got the audio completely from Mike's camera, and we just cut back and forth from the camera, from the film camera to the video camera, and this is all the first take.
And you can hear Heather's voice approach the video camera, which is kind of gives you that spatial feel. I mean, whenever you hear Heather's voice, you hear it kind of reverberate through the walls because you know she's far away from that audio source and that camera. You cut back to her.
So after this is where we cut to the second take, which we actually shot the next day right here. That's the second day.
Because the light died on us.
On the first day, the camera battery, just the light battery died.
They see some runes on the wall there, and then they come upon the famous handprints, which is just a little telltale sign of the kids. Again, another little reminder of the children.
And again, if you think about the day that we went out there and did that, and it's these really cute kids just having a blast.
Putting handprints on the walls.
Rubbing
charcoal cool house.
All over the place.
And then this is a mixture of about maybe at least two takes that we're intercutting here.
Now you'll notice as Mike's going down the stairs, if you listen closely, as the wind starts to pick up as you get near that basement, kind of a little, you know, turning the screws on the tension of the scene.
There's a cool little wind up in the attic too when you first get up there too.
It's very subtle, but it's one of the most effective sound design work that they did.
That basement really was creepy, man.
So Dan and I are dressed in black immediately to his left, and
we nail
him. That's me and Dan nailing him right there. I think I took the camera and Dan took the body.
Yeah, I took Mike, said, stand in the corner, don't move.
And then we go back in the corner.
And you can hear Heather's voice, you know, being recorded from that Hi-8 camera. So you've got her POV, but you're hearing her voice in the distance, which is kind of disorienting.
And this is actually a take that started right from that first floor. And we let her down.
Right.
And she just nailed Mike perfectly here. And the controversial Mike in the corner shot.
Mike in the corner. What is he doing?
I'm not sure.
That was a combination of two shots. We set this shot up and
another happy accident.
Yeah. And a little sound design there on the outer registration, which took a tremendous amount of work to get right. Those clumps at the end were tough.
And now Tony Cora's music.
Tony Cora's music. Yeah.
The man with the... Did he ever name that instrument?
No.
The choreograph.
And don't forget my credit sequence. Come on.
Yeah, Mike Minella's credit sequence.
I think he called it the Springathon.
The Mini 100
XR. The Springomatic.
Bye bye, Kevin Fox, two executive producers there.
Good shout out to me. Who we call Super Commando Jew.
Super Commando Jew. Tootsie Roll.
Tootsie Roll.
Moreno.
The Bert.
The Baby Eagle. The pacemaker.
The pacemaker. Tony got really hammered at the
rap party.
The rap party on puked pure paste. And Ben Rock made it his life mission to make him puke, and he puked up like this really thick paste stuff.
John and Janet.
He becomes
Howard John Bernstein. Pearson.
John Pearson, truly, I think the guy that if you go to a starting point,
that's the man.
When shit became real, that was John Pearson making that happen.
And Color Lab was really cool with us in Rockville.
Yeah. 4MC did and a really good transfer.
All the audition assistants going up to New York was a major pain in the ass.
You know, such a long, I mean, you know.
Bill Whitaker, all the investors. I mean, these are people.
18 months of work leading up to this, so people helping us out
Sarah,
through.
Rob's wife.
My wife.
Jeremy Walker, who continues to be invaluable.
Yeah, who rocks. I mean, just, you know, this is...
The guys who helped us with the investor tape.
I think it's cool that we've kept the credits like this. This is like your typical student or, you know, super low budget, which is what it is, obviously. But...
Well, you know, Artisan's too cheap. This is perfect.
It's cool that they kept them like this because you could easily say, hey, let's not have these really amateurish credits.
It all adds to the rawness of what you're watching.
Right.
Jeff Johnson, one of our first internet fans, actually
made it
on to the credits.
And all the ladies of Hacks and the girlfriends and wives that dealt with this moronity for so long.
And then the extra special things, those are actually all our investors, the people who came through and gave us
There's
the
Dennis
ducats.
Warner there on the left, who will probably make an appearance in Heart of Love, which is the next film. The cameraman, Dennis Warner.
So a lot of people. A lot of people giving us a lot of help. And they're just digging lilies. Check out that single. Riggers by Digging Lilies.
And Media 100.
It's actually, I think you can download it off their webpage.
Yeah, they've got a good website. Check it out.
They're on the whole MP3 tip.
Right on.
And get a free upgrade from Media 100 too for a credit. That'd be nice.
And the CD.
Well, I'm working on that. Okay, I'm working on that.
All right.
The infamous CD. And there's some.
The Dolby SR.
Yeah, there. Dolby SR, okay.
Okay, it's nice.
And that's just a whole bunch of small type.
Yes, it is fiction.
That's
and
right.
Remember Hacks
and that's what that says.
I was wondering about the burn convention on this. What
burn
in the world?
Convention's fine.
But this music that's is right. just perfect for the end of the movie. Just people leaving the theater and this.
Hey,
look,
it's the logo. Yeah. Hey,
there's
Hacks
the,
and Films.
Yes, sir. That's. So thanks for listening.
We love you. Remember, we love you.
And stay tuned for
Heart of Love, baby. 'Cause the moronic